Okay, so we said that our topic for tonight would be halachic and hashkafic ramifications of Matan Torah. So on a basic level, of course, the halachic and hashkafic implications are quite self-evident. So the halachic implications that we all became mushpa v'yomid meher Sinai, that we all became obligated in the mitzvahs of the Torah, and we became a Jewish nation, and many other major halachic and hashkafic implications that emerge from that. But I would like to focus on one other specific aspect, which most likely connects to Matan Torah, although that itself is a part of the discussion. And it is the notion that there is this pintel yid, that there is an inherent ratzon that is assumed, or that can be taken as a given, that every Jew, at least deep down, wants to fulfill the mitzvahs of the Torah. And therefore, even in the absence of other indications, it can be taken as a given that that's the case. And that, presumably, although we'll discuss it in a little bit more detail, that presumably is rooted in Matan Torah. And there are various nafkaminas lahalacha that flow both from the fact of that pintel yid, at least according to some, and that also maybe connect to its history or possible history at the Matan Torah that we commemorate this coming Yantif, this coming weekend. So, most prominently, this idea is associated with the Rambam. The Rambam, in the end of the second parak of Hilchas Gerushin, the Rambam talks about the fact that a get has to be given beratzon, that a get is only valid if a husband gives it willingly. And yet, it's still possible, the Gemara says, under certain circumstances, that Beis Din can be kofa a get, that Beis Din can compel a get. So that seems to be a direct contradiction. How could they both be true? How could it be that you can coerce a get, and yet the get is only valid if it was given of free will? So that's an important question one way or another, but the Rambam's explanation specifically is quite fascinating, and it shows up in places that are even more fascinating. The Rambam explains that given that there is a mitzvah here, and whatever that mitzvah is in the context of Gerushin is its own discussion, but the assumption seems to be that in that circumstance there is a mitzvah. Let's say for now, perhaps the mitzvah lishmoa divrei chachamim, because this is a mitzvah that reflects the fact that Beis Din has instructed this particular get. And being that that's the case, so we can assume that anything that is obligatory, anything that is coming as a mitzvah, so then that cannot be considered against someone's will. And even if the person is screaming he's not interested in doing this, that's only the Eitz Hara speaking. And deep down, the real inner Pintel Yid wants to do the right thing. So we have to apply pressure to this guy, however we do that. But that pressure is not to force him to do something he doesn't want to do. Adarabba, it's to distract the Yetzirah, to distract those other forces that are acting upon him to keep him from doing what deep down he really wants to do. Because deep down, the mitzvah is his actual ratzon, and everything else is a distraction. Everything else is just getting in the way. So, bichlal, that itself is very interesting. And this explanation, which you could have said is really like a Hasidic concept, and is being established here many centuries before the founding of Chassidus, in the words of the Rambam. But it's expressed in a very halachic context, in an extremely high-stakes halachic context. You can't get much higher stakes than this. This is to validate a get that would otherwise be not kosher, and that would otherwise lead to violations of Eishes Dish and Mamzerus. And because of this inner ratzon, the get now becomes kosher. Now, the Rambam wasn't mechadish that halacha. The halacha is from the Gemara, but the Rambam was mechadish, at least as far as we know, that explanation of the din of the Gemara, and that explanation specifically may have nafkaminas, and may have nafkaminas within that din of kfiya by gerushin, and may also have nafkaminas for other areas, and it shows up in some very interesting places. So just to try to discuss that a little bit, and to try to consider what the source for this is, first textually, and then practically, because that's going to get us to Matan Torah. So as far as textually, in the context of the Gemara and Kfiya L'Gerushin, so the Gemara does talk about Mitzvah L'Shmoa Divrei Chachamim, but it's not clear at all that that's what the Rambam is getting at, or that that statement is consistent with the Rambam specifically. First of all, that's kind of a havamin in the Gemara where it's expressed. It's not there as a final statement. But also, it could be a completely different interpretation. It could be that when the person is being pressured, so ultimately, because of the mitzvah, so then he will agree to it, even if he initially is disinclined. But it doesn't necessarily mean that we're tapping into some inner rotzon that is able to prevail, even if he's continuing to say no. So either we'll have to assume that the Gemara means like the Rambam is saying, or the Rambam means like the Gemara is saying. Either one could be defining the other. But it's not necessarily so pashut that that statement in the Gemara by itself is enough to explain the Rambam. The idea that the Yetzer Hara is some kind of external force that is acting on us, so that is something that we find a few places in Chazal. There's the Gemara in Brachos, which talks about the tefillah of Rav Alexandri, who would say that the Kadosh Baruch Hu, you know, that Ritzoneinu Lasos Ritzoneicha, that our will is to do your will, but Mai Ma'akvasan Sor Shavisa, the yeast that's in the dough, which is one of the most explicit references in Chazal, that there is a symbolism of the Yetzer Hara in Chametz. The idea, a Pesach topic, that Chametz represents the Yetzer Hara, is perhaps most explicitly stated in that Gemara, but it's relevant for our purpose also, in that it's a statement that we have an inner ratzon to follow God, and the Yetzer Hara is getting in the way, and that's the problem. And that, in essence, is what the Rambam is saying. And Reb Tzadok HaKohen and Reb Hutner and his writings, they connect this statement in the Gemara to the Rambam's position. Our Shlomo Eger, in his writings, he refers to this a few places as a Sefer from Shlomo Eger called the Sefer Aikarim, not to be confused with the earlier Sefer by Yosef Albo, but this is a Sefer similar to the Beis Otzer of Yosef Engel, where he has halachic and lumdisha discussions organized by the alphabet. And just like the Beis Otzer, he only has Aleph and Beis. So under Ones, he talks about this idea a few times. That idea that if you compel someone to do a mitzvah, it's not called Ones. And he connects it to an idea that Chazal have sometimes, that a person only sins if nichnas bo ruach shtos. So for those who were learning Sota, Daf Yomi, so to chazer back to the beginning, the Gemara and Daf Gimel and Masechta Sota has that idea that in Einot Amchote Elon Kein Nichnas Bo Ruach Shtus. It's also consistent with this idea that the Yetzer Hara is kind of coming from the outside. There are many who also assume that the Koach of Tshuva is connected to this idea. Rav Osner has this a few places in his drashos, and the idea from the pasuk in Parshas Nitzavim, which promises us about both the mitzvah and the potential of tshuva, and it says ki karov eilecha hadavar ma'od. What does it mean, ki karov? And he understands because it's already there. The netiya towards tshuva and the inclination to do the right thing is built in, and therefore that's going to bring us there. And he also points to a pasuk in Malachi, the Shevet Alevi, that when we talk about the fact that the Klal Yisrael is ultimately going to do tshuva, so the Jews are referred to as mevakshim, and he understands that to mean that there are forces that interfere with our inherent desire to do the right thing, and they will ultimately be weakened and will be able to do tshuva. The Kadosh Lover of, in his drashas in a few places, understands that the idea that tshuva me'ava, then we do tshuva out of love, so that turns our averos into mitzvos, not just into shkagos, but actually into positive mitzvos, that is also a result of the fact that there is this inner yid. There is a sefer that's all about Kfiya L'Gerushin called Eilu Kofin L'Hotzi, written by Rav Yosef Goldberg, who's dying in Yerushalayim. And he notes, as far as the Makkah here, that there's really two parts of what the Rambam is saying. There's the idea that on the inner level, so we're all pure, and our ratzon is to do the right thing. And separately from that, the fact that the Yetzer Hara is getting in the way. So as far as the second specifically, he suggests that there is another Gemara that also is relevant here, the statement in the Gemara of Barasi Yetzer Hara, Barasi Torah Tavlin, the Gemara in Kiddushin, that God says that I created the Yetzer Hara, and I also created the Torah as the remedy. So perhaps that's also reflective of this idea. So one should be focused on Torah study, so as the Gemara goes on to say, one shouldn't be given into the hands of the Yetzer Hara. So all of these may give us some kind of a textual basis for a source for this idea. But what we're more interested in tonight, in reference to Shavuos and Matan Torah, is where practically does this come from? When does this Pintali Yid start? How is it implanted within us? So many assume that it starts at Matan Torah. Rav Schechter quotes in Eretz Tzvi, if I recall correctly, that Rav Soloveitchik understood that it was connected to the Gemara Nida, and says that the whole Torah is taught by the Malach to the baby in the womb. So that maybe instills within him this inner ratzon, even though the Torah itself is forgotten. But much more commonly, it's associated with the Matan Torah. So if that's the case, so yes, this makes this more relevant for Shavuos. But we have to first note that assuming there's a connection to Matan Torah means we have to work out some details about a often quoted Gemara that is connected to Matan Torah, which either is a support for this idea or perhaps a stira to this idea, or maybe some kind of a modification to this idea. So the Gemara in Maseches Shabbos, the Gemara has a story, Gemara in Shabbos on Peches and Midbeis, talks about that time of Matan Torah and has somewhat of a stira, which needs to be reconciled, somewhat of a contradiction to the idea that's conveyed in the Psukim, in Yisro and Mishpatim, that we were very eager to receive the Torah, and we said Nasa v'nishma. But the Gemara also says it's not that simple, because apparently we needed to be convinced. And that HaKadosh Baruch Hu kof aleihem har kegiges, he turned the mountain upside down on top of them, and he said, if you're willing to accept the Torah, good, and if not, sham tehei kfur aschem. So then this is where it ends for you. And following up on that, the Gemara says that this is a modar rabba l'araisa. And Rashi explains what that means. What does that mean, modar rabba l'araisa? It means that this is an excuse. This is our defense, that if we are found to have not fulfilled the mitzvahs of the Torah, so we could say, well, what do you want from us? We didn't choose to accept it. It was forced upon us. So it's understandable if we don't actually follow through and observe all the laws. But then the Gemara goes on to say that actually we did accept it willingly later, after the whole miracle of Purim. So then, Kimu v'kiblu ha'yehudim, says the Megillah, and that Gemara interprets that line, Kimu v'kiblu ha'yehudim, Kimu mashekiblu kfar, that they upheld that which they had originally accepted. So when they accepted the Torah to Har Sinai, it wasn't fully willing. And then later on, after the miracle of Purim, they accepted it with full ratzon. So how does that Gemara interact with the Rambam's idea? Right? The Rambam's notion that there is this inner desire to do the right thing, and therefore that's called ratzon. So does this Gemara give us the basis for that? Does this Gemara contradict that? Does this Gemara modify that. So you find all of that in Svarim. So some suggest that there's a contradiction here, because if the Gemara says that it's a Modah Rabba L'Araisa, that we would be excused, or it seems like we would have an excuse if we were to say that we're not responsible for the Torah because we didn't really accept it willingly. So some suggest that that's a contradiction to the Rambam, because if the Rambam says that coercion can be effective, can be valid, if it's something that is the Ratzon Hashem, because that's what we want to do, so then this should have worked. So why didn't it work then? Why is it a Moradah Rabba L'Araisa? So some understand this to be a stira to the Rambam's position. There is a fascinating discussion about this in the Chem de Shlomo. The Chem de Shlomo in his tshuvas at the very end of Choshen Mishpat, the last tshuva in Choshen Mishpat. So he has a fascinating tshuva about this, where he's so bothered by the question that he completely redefines the Gemara. He understands that Gemara totally differently than the Rishonim do. And he has a couple of other questions that he notes that, first of all, this whole phrase, Modah Rabba L'Araisa, especially in light of the Rambam, is unusual. And anyway, then the Gemara goes on to undo it by saying that at Purim time we did accept it willingly, so the whole thing's not Negei anymore. So why do we leave it as if it's a Modah Rabba L'Araisa and then say that the fact that made it that isn't true anymore? And also, the phrase Modah Rabba L'Araisa doesn't really sound like that's what it means. And, you know, nowadays, if you were to see a sign up in Mei Sharim, as you may often do, it says Modah Rabba L'Araisa, it doesn't mean here's the reason why you don't have to keep the mitzvahs. What it normally would mean is here's a great announcement for the Torah. Here's some big news. So, big news positively regarding the Torah. So, how do you interpret Modah Rabba L'Araisa that way? So, the Chem de Shlomo reinterprets everything there. He says it's not at all what's going on. And also, the basic issue that's really blatant is how do you deal with the fact that the Gemara is contradicting on the surface Nasa v'Nishma? And on that same daf in Shabbos and Peches and Medbeis, the Gemara has the whole discussion about how the Malachim came down and they gave all the Jews two crowns because they were so impressed that the Jews said Nasa v'Nishma. And so on the same daf, it says, oh, they didn't really mean it, they were forced. So the Chem de Shlomo redefines everything. And he says that really we did say Nasa v'Nishma and we accepted the Torah willingly, but it still wasn't enough. And we need an even higher level of enthusiasm in order to really be able to engage with the Torah. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu to compel even greater commitment, and that was what the Kfiya represents. And the Gemara says, Modah Rabba L'Araisa, this is a great announcement of just how much commitment you need in order to be able to engage with Torah fully. You need to be so absolutely brought in that even Nasa v'Nishma wasn't enough. There was another level that was necessary. And then the Gemara goes on to say that by Purim time, there was another level that was necessary and that was accomplished. So it's an interesting interpretation, but it answers all his questions. Has a whole different meaning, but a part of what was driving his question is that it was apparently in contradiction to the Rambam's position. A little interesting footnote here, if you want to look up this tshuva, you can find it online in the tshuvas Chem de Shlomo that's available on HebrewBooks.org. It's the last tshuva in Choshen Mishpat, I think it's Siman Yud Gimel. And I don't know if this was a printing thing that was common then, I don't see this too often, but the last column there, it would have left a blank space in the page. So guess what the printer decided to do was, instead of leaving the bottom half blank, so he made every line smaller and centered towards the middle until it got to the bottom. So actually the tshuva looks like an upside down mountain. Looks like a kafalayim harkig gig. So I don't know if that was intentional or not, but that's just an interesting little footnote. Anyway, so that was the Chem de Shlomo. But so others asked the question differently, and others said that if you want to say that the whole concept of this inner ratzon of this pintel yid comes from Har Sinai, so then that's the problem, because if we didn't actually accept the Torah willingly, if it was under duress, so then how does it work? So if we had accepted the Torah willingly, so then he could say, okay, that's how we displayed, that's what we really want to do. And therefore, everything else flows from that. But we have to at least accept it the first time. But if we weren't willing to accept it the first time, so then we're going to have to wonder that that's going to be a problem. That's going to seem to undermine the Rambam's whole premise. So it's asking the question in a different way. And the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he's bothered by this. And therefore, the Chasam Sofer suggests, and he has a whole lumdus to go along with this, that the Rambam's din was only true after Purim time. That before Purim, that wasn't the case, because we didn't really accept the Torah willingly, so we can't actually say that the inner Rotzon was there, and therefore a coerced get would have been good. But after Purim time, then, when we accepted the Torah willingly, so then it's possible to say that there is this inner Rotzon, and therefore whatever was accepted defines the attitude, and everything flows from there. But he also notes that you could say a different approach if you accept the Mahalach of the Medrash Tanchuma. There's a Medrash Tanchuma in Parshas Noach that addresses that basic stira that we mentioned, that how do you reconcile Kimu v'Kiblu and this idea of the Jews being coerced. So Tanchuma says that there's a distinction here between the Torah Shebichsav and the Torah Shebalpeh. That the Torah Shebichsav, so that we did indeed accept willingly. But when it came to the Torah Shebalpeh, we said, wait a minute, that's too much. All the chumras and all the details and all of the extra dinim and the siyagim, that's too much. We weren't willing to accept that. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, nothing doing, it's a package deal. And he forced us to accept the Torah Shebalpeh also. So the Chasam Sofer in this tshuva, he just has that one line, and he says, so if you say like that, then you don't have a problem. So what does he mean? So what he probably means, there's a discussion about this in a contemporary Sefer al Torah, Masa Yad, that has a mahalach like this, probably what the Chasam Sofer means, that if you say that the Torah was accepted willingly at Har Sinai, at least the Torah Shebichsav, so then it actually fits the Rambam pretty well. Then the idea is that, yes, we showed that we were willing to accept the Torah on a basic level, so that established the inner Ratzon. But the Torah Shebalpeh, we didn't want that. Why? Because it was too burdensome, it was too much. That's the Yetzer Hara the Rambam's talking about, that the Yetzer Hara gets in the way and says that we can't actually handle it all. So that coercion is effective to work around that Yetzer Hara. So once you've established that first desire to be a part of the Torah's commandments, so then what comes as a function of the Yetzer Hara, Kfiya, can get around, and perhaps therefore it Davka works with the Gemara if you take that position. This also could be relevant to another question that comes up, because the Gemara in the beginning of Avodah Zarah talks about the fact that all of the nations of the world are ultimately going to be held to task for not observing the mitzvahs of the Torah and not accepting the mitzvahs of the Torah. And the Gemara says, and in fact, the nations of the world themselves raise this as a problem, that doesn't seem to be fair, that if God was willing to be kofa us, so he should have been kofa them also. So if he'd been kofa the non-Jews, so then they would have accepted it, then they would have been in a better position. And the Gemara says, they asked that klum kafinu aleinu harkigigas, did you pressure us to receive the Torah? So taka, it sounds like it's not fair. So unless you say that this kfiyah only works if there is initially some indication that you want to do the Ratzon Hashem. You have to at least have that first step. So if indeed the Jews accepted the Torah on any level, so then the rest can be compelled. But if there's no previous Kabbalah Satorah, so then there's no room for Kfiyah. There's no way to say that the Ratzon is really there. And that's the distinction between the Jews and the Ummah Sa'olam. Others have a different distinction, and they note that maybe it connects to the Sheva Mitzvos that the Jews also had already been doing, and the non-Jews didn't accept, and so maybe that's why they weren't Zocha to have this Kfiyah. So there are different approaches along those lines. But in that same Sefer, Eilu Shekofim Lahotzi, by Yosef Goldberg, he has a different approach, which also fits in a nice way. And he notes that Tosfos over there in Shabbos has a different way of addressing the Nasa V'Nishma Kafu Aleihem Stira. And there, Tosfos suggests that the Jews were ready and did accept the Torah willingly, and the idea of turning the mountain over on their head, that was so that they shouldn't retract later. They shouldn't rescind their acceptance. So if you factor that into here, so then you can perhaps find the source for both halves of the Rambam's idea. As we noted, the same Rabbi Goldberg had pointed out that there were two halves, the inner Ratzon and the Yetzirah. So the inner Ratzon, so that was displayed by the fact that the Jews enthusiastically accepted the Torah. But there was the fear that that would eventually fade and needed to be reinforced. So that's a concern for the Yetzirah, that the Yetzirah will come and get in the way. So in that sense, it does seem to very well parallel what the Rambam is describing. And so maybe indeed that is a mucker together with that for that whole structure. So beyond that, how exactly does it work? This also is explained a little bit more, perhaps, by the Malbim. The Malbim in the beginning of Sefer Vayikra talks about the fact that there's a similar structure by a korban. A korban also has to be brought beratzon. Yet you can also compel a korban. So how do you understand that? So if I understand the Malbim correctly, so he explains that there's different ideas of wanting to do something. There is, in Hebrew, you could call it chefetz or ratzon. And if I'm understanding him correctly, it says a chefetz, that's an emotional, instinctive desire. You feel you want to do something. Well, ratzon, so that's more intellectual and rational. So it could be somebody's not chafetz to give a get, let's say. He doesn't feel like he wants to do it. But you could make an intellectual decision that you want to. So that might be what's going on, that if you understand that this is ultimately what's best for you, so then even if you feel like you don't want to, but on a different level, on a Rutzen level, you will see that you do, so to speak, want to. So the Malbim says that to explain that in the context of Korban, but then he says, at the end, he says, this is Ka'ein, what the Rambam writes in Hilchos Gerushin. So it seems like he's saying that this is along the lines of what the Rambam is getting to. Now, it's interesting that the Chavos Yar has a tshuva where he objects to the Rambam. And he says he doesn't think it's true what the Rambam's describing. He's saying that the pressure has gotten rid of the Yetzirah, but that doesn't seem to work, he says, because it's not the kfiya, it's not the pressure that's already happened that has done the job. It's the fear that it's going to keep going. Because the person is afraid, he's going to get more quote-unquote pressure, so that's why he feels like he's going to have to give the get and prevent that. But if he knew, if he could be absolutely sure that there wasn't going to be any more pressure, then he probably would stay anywhere he is and stand his ground and not give the get. So the Chavos Yar doesn't like the Rambam, and he gives his own pshat on what's going on. So, and that's safe for Eilu Shekof and Lahotzi by Goldberg. So he thinks the Rambam is correct, and he gives a mashal to explain. He says, let's say you have somebody who is taken captive, and he can't escape until his friends come, and they fight against the people jailing him, and then he'll be able to escape. So when they're fighting against the jailers, so then he's able to run away. And yes, it may be true that if they would stop beating up his jailers, so then maybe they will recapture him. But as long as that hasn't happened yet, so then he's free at that time. So yes, if he's recaptured, then that'll bring him back to his state of onus. But until now, until then, so he's able to express his actual ratzon. So too, when it comes to the get, even if the Chavos Yar was right, that he's not willing to do this unless he still is afraid there's going to be more pressure, but that only means that he would go back to captivity, so to speak. And it doesn't change the fact that what he does during his moments of pressure may actually be what he is really about. So we said there are nafka minas lahalacha of the Rambam's position. This is very, very significant because, again, the stakes here are incredibly high. And using this Pintel Yid to explain it, it would certainly be very significant if the Rambam was being mechadish this din. So that's not the case. The din is from the Gemara, but the Rambam's explanation could have nafkaminas both within Gittin and in other areas. So that's very significant. So one of the issues is a Marik, who has a tshuva, where the Shaul makes a suggestion that he agrees with, that he says that maybe if somebody was a Meshumad, if somebody has left Klal Yisrael, so then maybe he can't be Kofaget according to the Rambam, because how could you say his Ratzon is to do the right thing? He's shown that his Ratzon is not to be a part of Klal Yisrael. So he suggests, the Marik, that that seems to be true. So it must be, since we don't find that you can't coerce a Meshumad, Adarab, he's probably the one you most likely need to be kofa. So we don't find, somebody certainly would have said if it's not going to work by him. So it must be that that functions some other way. It must be that that's a function of Afkinu Rabbanim L'Kedushin Minei, that Chazal canceled out his Kedushin, and that's why it works, but the Rambam's logic doesn't apply. The Maritz alone actually says that get does not work in that case with a Meshumad because of the Rambam. But there were others who disagreed completely, and they thought that even within the Rambam, it still could apply to a Meshumad. So, for example, Chazon Ish says like this, that the idea that the husband really wants to do what the Torah asks, that doesn't refer to where he's holding right now. It refers to his inner ideal desire. So that's true, even if he's otherwise saying that he's not interested in Klal Yisrael. And the Chasam Sofer, just you see from what the Chasam Sofer writes, that this seems to be his assumption also, because he has a tshuva where he explains the position of Rabbeinu Tam that doesn't allow the use of a non-Jewish name in a get, and he says it's because in the case of a Meshumad, so a get is often going to be coerced, that's the nature of things, and at that time, this person who has distanced himself from Klal Yisrael is now going back to his roots, he's going to want his Jewish name, so a non-Jewish name is not going to be relevant anymore. There's a different application of the issue of Meshumad in the Tshuvas of Rabbi Elia Mizrahi. He talks about, let's say, somebody who's on his deathbed, and he wants to give his wife a get before he dies, because he's got a brother who is a Meshumad, and he doesn't want her to have to deal with Yibum with him. But the problem is, she's not there at the moment to get the get. So the question is, can somebody else acquire it on her behalf and assume that it's a zchus for her? So there, he invokes the Rambam, and he says, Rabbi Elia Mizrahi, based on the Rambam, that you can assume that she doesn't want to be married to a Meshumad, that's not going to be consistent with fulfilling Ratzon Hashem, so therefore, this move to save her from that, we can assume that she agrees to it, and therefore, the get is a schus for her, and can be accepted on her behalf. The Gemara says, in the context of this sugi about being a kofig a get, that it's only a bezdin shel Yisrael who can do it, even if the circumstances justify it, and a civil authority cannot do it. So the Maram Shik, in his commentary to the Gemara, so he says that's because there's a connection here between the Rambam's rule and the Isser Arkos. So since one's not allowed to go to civil courts in order to deal with their issues, so because there would be an Isser involved, so then the Pintali Yid doesn't want that, and therefore he's not going to go along with it. So if you're going to go to Arkos in order to have this get brought about, the Pintali Yid no longer is on board. And it's interesting, I don't remember if he says this, but you could also then use it to explain further that the Gemara does say, and it's a whole machlokus how exactly this is applied, but the Gemara does say that if the civil authorities are acting as agents of the Beis Din, and they are saying, we're here to enforce what the Beis Din said to do, then it could be good. So if the whole issue is the Isser Arkos, so that actually also helps that point, because if somebody goes to Beis Din, let's say there's a situation where they only want to go to civil court because they need enforcement power, so then if they go to Beis Din first and they say, I want to go to Beis Din, but I need to have this enforced, and the Beis Din gives them a heter to go to the civil court for that purpose, so that would take away the Isser. So then that also fits with this explanation. So in that case, it works, because then the Ratzon comes back, because now there isn't a Isser anymore. There's a related svara in a different area. The Radbaz has a tshuva, where he says there was a person once who was forced to take a shvua that he's not going to go back to a position. Let's say he was in a certain job and there was some kind of scandal and they didn't want him doing it anymore, so they forced him to take a shvua that he won't go back to this job. So it was coerced, the shvua. But the Rabbah says that he thinks it could still be a valid shvua, because if indeed he wasn't fitting for this position, and there was some kind of a halachic value that would be contradicted by him occupying it, so then the Ratzon HaTorah is he shouldn't do it. So the shvua, even if it was coerced, but the shvua is consistent with the Ratzon HaTorah, and based on the Rambam, says the Rabbah, it's going to work. It's also interesting, again, to go beyond the issues of Gittin. So you find that a few places in the Achronim, a number of places, that they use the Rambam's Yesod to explain other dinim in Shas and elsewhere, that it's based on this idea. So that has kind of a synergy to it, because it means that the Rambam's Yesod is explaining those dinim. But if that's the correct explanation, then it means that those dinim are a raya for the Rambam's Yesod, because the dinim, let's say, are principles in Shas. So if they are true and they're functioning that way, so then maybe that's a proof to the Rambam's position. So there's a mutual benefit here if these achronim are correct, that there's this relationship. So to give a few examples of that, so a number of Achronim point out, the Reb Shlomo Eger and the Sefer Ikarim and a number of others all have this point, that the opinion in the Gemara, that if somebody is forced to eat matzah on Pesach, that he could be Yotzei the Mitzvah that way. They explain that based on the Rambam. It's a different application of Kfiyah. But if the assumption is, okay, that anything that's Ratzon Hashem is susceptible to Kfiyah, so then that would work. And the Shuvas Yad Sofer is a little bit of a different application, but along the same lines, the idea of Tofes the Baal Chov, the notion that we can confiscate money from people who owe in order to pay their creditors. So there he assumes that because Priyas Baal Chov Mitzvah, because a mitzvah to pay back the loans, so therefore, look at the Rambam, you can be kofeh based on the Rambam. And there are other dinim that aren't about Kfiyah at all, where it's invoked. So, for example, Rav Shlomo Eger explains the rule of Kol Milsa de Amar Rachmana Lo Saved Yavi Lo Mahani, that anything the Torah says you're not allowed to do, if you do it, it does not take effect. It doesn't have a chalos. So he says that that's connected to this, because since there's an Isser, so then we have to assume that there's no actual Ratzon, even if a person thinks he wants to bring about this status, and therefore it's going to be neutralized on that level. There are also some who explain that this is how Hefker Bezdin Hefker works. In the Sefer Darche Aaron of Rav Aaron Weinstein, says the idea that Bezdin can confiscate your property, so that's also because we assume that you agree. And if Bezdin has decided that your property needs to be confiscated, so then there's a mitzvah involved, and it works. Now, the Malbim in his Sefer Artzos Achayim is the halachic work, his short halachic work. So he quotes the Rambam in order to explain, you sometimes say that a mitzvah, if somebody wants to use your property for a mitzvah, even if it's going to cause you a hefset, according to some in some contexts, we might say, Nichale le'inish le'mebe mitzvah mone, a person would be happy to have his property used for a mitzvah. So Artzos Achayim, he points again to the Rambam as the possible source for that. The Marsham has a tshuva where he makes a brief reference in order to explain a part of the whole back and forth of why it is that you don't listen to a parental command if it violates the Torah. So there are different aspects to this whole relationship, but the bottom line is that we don't follow a parental instruction against the Torah. So a part of the puzzle, the Marsham says, is because you don't assume that the parent really wants it. That if the parent asks you to do something, but it happens to be against the Torah, so it can't be they really want you to do that. So therefore, the instruction isn't there. And even though he was saying in that tshuva that Kibbud Av in general is not really based on the instruction, it's based on the reality that that's what the parents want. So even if there was no instruction, but the parents want it, the mitzvah should apply. But he says here, even that's not there. The parents don't really want it if it would violate the Torah. And therefore, once again, the Rambam comes to explain things. Rav Shlomo Gross, the Belzer Dayan, in his Tshuvas Mishnah Shlema, he also uses this to explain the view that some of the Rishonim have, that regarding chametz, that bitul chametz is not effective if for chametz yadua, chametz that you know about. So some of the Rishonim, maybe the Rambam, there's different nishchos in the Rambam, maintains that bitul only works for chametz you don't know about. So he explains that since the Ratzon HaTorah is that you're actually supposed to destroy your chametz and not just cancel it, so bittul, that is being applied to chametz that you know about and you could be destroying, we have to assume it's lacking intent. It doesn't have the real ratzon, because that's not what the Torah wants you to do. There's a sefer called Ezra's Nashim by Meir Meiri, who talks about Yibum and Chalitza, and explains, goes into the whole issue of ratzon by Yibum and Chalitza, and he explains there that they're on opposite ends of the das and ratzon spectrum, that Yibum needs the least, and Chalitza seems to need the most. And he explains that based on the idea that if we assume that Yibum is really what the Torah wants, and Chalitza is only because you're not doing what the Torah wants, so then it makes sense that Yibum doesn't need any Ratzon, because it's just fulfilling the Ratzon Hashem, so it's automatic, while Chalitza is a mitzvah, but a b'di'evet kind of mitzvah, so it is not following the Ratzon Hashem in that sense, so therefore you need to supply the das, it's not going to happen on its own. But it's also especially interesting, not just in the context of these other sugyas, but also in areas of psak that are separate from kfiyah and gittin, so you find this invoked as well. And it comes up, let's say, in contexts like mechiras chametz, when sometimes there's a concern that the person selling his chametz, let's say, if we don't think that either he is actually interested, maybe he's not, maybe he's going along with it, but we don't think he's really sincere because maybe he's not so observant, or maybe he's not even holding in what's going on. So the Chelkas Yaakov quotes in his tshuvas, he has a few tshuvas like this, Reb Yaakov Breisch, that he thinks that based on the Rambam, that works. That even if the people involved don't actually know or really care about the proper way to do things, but because the inner ratzon is indeed to do things the proper way, so then we can assume that it's effective. And he says this is a bigger chiddush, he acknowledges, because there are two parties involved who need to be sincere, the seller and the buyer, and one of them doesn't have a pintaliyah, one of them isn't actually Jewish, but nonetheless, this is significant enough, and he thinks that this could work. And Yitzchak Zilberstein has a similar statement in his farm, and he thinks that this is also what the Divrei Chaim was getting at. The Sanz Rebbe, Divrei Chaim, has a tshuva where he discussed a non-observant Jew who basically said out loud in a note to his non-Jewish wife that she should sell the chametz. He's not home. She should sell his chametz because that's what the rabbi says to do if he wants to be able to sell it after Pesach, even though it's just bifnim, even though it's just a superficial sale. So it sounds like he's not taking it seriously, but the Divrei Chaim thought it was valid anyway, and or Silberstein thought that it was connected to this Rambam, that even if somebody says he thinks it's not serious, but pintaliyah inside, he wants it to be serious. And the Chelkas Yaakov also applies this to a heteriska, where you have this arrangement that we've been talking about last week, so a little bit of hemshech on that topic, even though we said we were going to talk about a different topic tonight, but a little bit of hemshech to last week's topic of the heteriska. So if you have the heteriska that is supposed to restructure an arrangement between what would be a lender and a borrower and turn it into a investor and a worker. So what if one part or the other doesn't care, doesn't understand what's going on, doesn't care that much? So should that undermine everything? So the Chelkas Yaakov says that, again, it works because of the Rambam. And now this is better than Mechiras Chametz, because now at least you have two Jews, so that has at least that side. The Rabbi Israel Eger, who was a great-great-grandson of Rabbi Akiva Eger, so he had a proposal regarding the heteriska, which maybe we'll talk about next week or whenever we pick up with part three, but just a little bit of a preview, that he thought that they should make every Jew should make a heteriska klalis that applies once in his lifetime. He should make this declaration, and it applies to all of his transactions. And there was a lot of debate about whether that was valid or not, and we'll talk about that a different time. But he suggests that this is here especially for a Jew who's generally observant, but may forget in a specific instance to use a heteriska. So in that case, he thought that since the inner ratzon is to do the right thing, so if you happen to be distracted and forget to do the right thing, so then your intent can be defined by your previous statement. And so taking the Rambam a little bit differently, saying especially because this Jew has previously declared what he wants to be the default in other situations, but he uses the Rambam that way to say that it should be effective. So that's a little bit of a different spin, but the way the Chalkas Yaakov and others had it, and Reb Zilberstein had it, it was different than, let's say, the Marik we mentioned before, who raised that issue about the Meshumad. So here, these Achronim are saying that even somebody who's known not to be observant, so the Rambam's idea would still be effective, which is certainly a big chiddush. And this relates to a machlokes that came up later about whether the Rambam's position meant that there's a cheskes kashrus to stam a Jew in general. Do we assume he has a cheskes kashrus? So the Satmarov thought no. He thought that the Rambam was specifically talking about somebody who's being coerced, and the implication being that the rest of the time he doesn't have a cheskes kashrus, and so therefore you shouldn't assume he's doing the right thing. But Devrei Chaim, we mentioned a few minutes ago, in a different tshuva, he quotes the Rambam to suggest that there is, in general, a cheskes kashrus to the average Jew, and he cites the Rambam to that effect, that the Pintel Yud has accomplished that. There is a, as by not so surprising, that there are some applications in the Hashkafic realm as well from this idea. So Reb Moshe Feinstein, in a few places in the Darish Moshe, quotes the Rambam to say that we shouldn't give up on the hope that any Jew will repent. And also the idea that the Gemara has that lo'olam yasek adam b'torah mitzvahs afilu shelo lishma, shemitoch shelo lishma v'al lishma. So we normally think that means that it's kedai to do mitzvahs that are not lishma, because then ultimately you will do mitzvahs lishma. So he says, no, it means that even now, that even as you're doing the mitzvah shelo lishma, it is lishma because of the Rambam, because the Pintel Yid means that it is lishma. Reb Tzadok HaKohen has similar ideas in his writing, in his writings, and he says that's also why the Gemara says that, and it's a whole discussion about this, but the Gemara says that if somebody gives staka for other reasons, or maybe not even knowing about it, fell out of his pocket, so the Gemara says, harei zeh tzadik gomer, so that, he says, the same kind of idea, because even if he has other reasons or no knowledge of it at all, but the inner ratzon to do the right thing is able to supply that, so that's mitzura flamaisa to his action, and that is indeed considered to be a mitzvah. And the Kajgal Verav, in his drushes, he suggests that therefore you don't even need to have any das at all. So he suggests that that's why a baby at his breast, an eight-day-old baby who has no decision-making capacity or any awareness, but he can have a zchus in his own bris, because his inner ratzon is able to supplement the fact that he has no consciousness or decision-making ability, and that will credit him for his bris. So it's quite fascinating, in general, all of these applications, which may indeed emerge from Matan Torah. Just close by noting that some of these achronim, like the Chalkas Yaakov and others, who brought it up in the context of the Hatarisk and Mechiras Chametz, so they note that Rebellio Klatskin, who was a very fascinating Rav from Poland in the 1800s. So he really had this idea earlier, this application. So indeed, he has a sefer called Evin Pina, which was just reprinted in a slightly fancier edition, still not such a fancy edition, but there's a drasha there, drasha Yud Aleph, where he makes this point that when it comes to things like Mechiras Chametz and the Hetariska and everything that seems like it's a harama, everything that seems like you're working around the Torah, you're not really sincere, so intent is everything. And we can use the Rambam to assume that there is, in general, good intent, and that's why, at least without other complicating factors, that's why these things work. And he suggests that's pshat and a statement in the Yerushalmi and Maaser Sheni, that the Yerushalmi comments on the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, in the context of Maaser Sheni, that it's possible and it's apparently recommended to do a harama in the context of redeeming, of being poda Maaser Sheni, which normally the Torah says you have to add on a chomesh, you have to add on a monetary penalty. And here, the Mishnah gives you a way to get out of it, that if you give your money over, you give the mitzvah, the commandment of the pigeon, over to somebody else, let's say who you trust, but they're not directly connected to you, let's say like an adult child, and you ask them to do the pidyon, so then that could save you from the chomesh, and the Mishnah calls that a harama. So the Gemara says, why are you able to do that? Because tichsiv bo bracha, because the pasuk in Parshas Re'eh, which talks about this, uses the language bracha. So what's going on there? What does that mean? So there's a lot of fascinating explanations. The Chasam Sofer has a tshuva about that with a very unusual explanation. I think there's a different way to explain it, but without getting into all that, just to mention what Balyo Kolaskin says, he says what the Gemara is getting at is that you might be concerned that maybe this individual is not acting sincerely, that he's giving the money over to somebody else, but he's not actually giving it to him. It's all a fakery. He's actually holding on to it and just pretending that this guy is acting independently. So maybe we should be worried about that. So Yerushalmi is saying, no, there's a bracha. There's a bracha associated with Maiser Sheni and maybe with the pigeon Maiser Sheni. So because the inner Pintel Yid always wants to do the right thing, and especially if it's something that's going to bring about a bracha, so then we can believe it'll be sincere under these circumstances that will stand in as his ratzon, and therefore we can recommend that action looks like a harama. It's okay because it's going to be sincere because the bracha represents what the Pintel Yid is going to want to do, and therefore it's going to be effective. So it's a fascinating interpretation, and I think it's this drasha that the Chalkes Yaakov and others were referring to and saying that this could be applied more broadly. So there is a lot that all emerges from this statement of the Rambam. It had a fascinating impact, and it seems reasonable to say that it is connected to Matan Torah and its enduring effect. So as we look towards Shavuos, and we look towards celebrating what Matan Torah did for Klal Yisrael, so this notion that there is always this inner ratzon that's going to connect us, and that we are ki'ish echad b'lev echad, and that whatever may be getting in the way in the moment, and whatever may make it seem like it's not actually present, we can maintain a emuna that ultimately, and even now, it is there, that that ratzon is perhaps buried, but still has its power, still has its impact, is a very powerful idea, and is one more reason to celebrate the giving of the Torah this coming Yantif. So with that, I wish you all a wonderful Shavuos. It should be a fantastic Kabbalah Satorah, and God willing, I look forward to more Talmud Torah with you after you have received it on Yantif. So I should have a wonderful Yantif, and God willing, I will see you next week.